for America.
With sincere appreciation to Kevin Miller for your extraordinary efforts to help the Boise Rescue Mission with Miller's Mission. You're the hero for all of us in the nonprofit world, but particularly for the Boise Rescue Mission.
Fighting for Idaho.
What you do is not just highlight giving for a one moment in time, but you stress to make giving part of your life.
Fighting for you.
You'll never know,
Kevin,
how much I love you. So take our away.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO, Kevin Miller in the Morning. Good to have you with us. Phone number is 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. Joining us now to talk about the Iraq War, Carter Andrus with us. Carter, good morning.
Morning, Kevin. How are you, sir?
Well, we're trying to adapt and improvise and overcome. Let's talk about your new publication, Victory Undone, The Defeat of Al-Qaeda in Iraq and the Resurrection as ISIS. You know, there's a hidden thing going on here. Concerning what we did and what we didn't do in Iraq, and you're right on it.
Well, that's exactly what I talk about in my book, Victory Undone, is it actually how we defeated Al-Qaeda in Iraq and then how we left the country to a situation where Al-Qaeda was able to reconstitute itself, resurrect itself in the vacuum that we left in Syria and then have a conventional invasion into Iraq and the situation we have right now.
No, before we get to that, tell us about your experience in Iraq.
Well, I spent 4 years on the ground in Iraq during the war there as a military contractor. We employed over 10,000 Iraqis, Sunni, Shia, Kurds, on reconstruction projects, primarily in the Sunni Triangle and the more dangerous areas of the war.
So you were down there by Balad and all those other places?
Oh, yeah, we did work in Balad and Fallujah and Ramadi and Al-Walid on the Syrian border and Mosul throughout Baghdad. It was, we're still there. We have people, in Erbil, Kurdistan. So we've been involved in Iraq since early 2004.
All right, Carter, what was it like to hire, to work with, and depend on the Iraqis?
Well, you know, I tell you, if we could boil down the message of my book, Victory Undone, which General Tommy Franks, you know, the commander of the invasion of both Iraq and Afghanistan, refers to as a solid history that reads like a thriller, is that we were able to accomplish things in very difficult circumstances working together with the Iraqis. I mean, on my average workforce on a normal day was about 1,000, and 85% of them were Iraqis. And I traveled over 15,000 miles around Iraq with my Arab and Kurd security team, where if they had turned me into Al-Qaeda, they would have got a major multiple on their monthly salary, but did not. Shared risk, shared purpose, shared mission. And, you know, we got things accomplished. So we can do things together with the Iraqis, and so I think that's the positive message I want to deliver, and because we're going to have to do it again now, unfortunately.
Well, that's the issue that I have. I mean, we talk about Fallujah and those contractors that were lost there. We talk about the rise of ISIS. Does this all come down to we didn't secure a status forces agreement?
Well, that's definitely part of it, Kevin. I mean, this is what the analogy that I use is: can you imagine if we had left South Korea, with the troops pulling out 2 years after the Korean War was over? I mean, we left; it wouldn't exist today as a prosperous democratic state it is. We left Iraq in 2011 with the troops, and then even more importantly, I think we pulled out, all our intelligence support in 2012 in a very fragile state, in a very very dangerous neighborhood.
Well, what I don't understand, and Carter, you probably know about this, what's going on now. First, it was 1,500. Now it's double. Who knows? There could be 5,000 troops in Iraq right now, for all we know.
Well, we definitely need... I believe that we can get this done without putting thousands of Americans in combat over there. Now, we're going to have forward air controllers and advisors, which has happened now, to train up, to reconstitute the Iraqi army and to, direct the awesome firepower that we possess, with our Air Force. And so that's going to have to happen. But we're going to need to bring in the regional Muslim nations to support the actual occupation of Syria, because that's really the root of the problem here, I believe.
Carter Andrews with us. The defeat of al-Qaeda in Iraq and its resurrection as ISIS, Victory Undone, his new publication. What do you say to most folks in Idaho where it's snowing right now, or even where you live in Annapolis, that have checked out of the war because of the cost, because of the casualties of the money, and say, enough of that area, we're done?
Well, I think we have to realize that these are the same people that we're dealing with now with ISIS that attacked us on 9/11. So if we look back to what was the cost of 9/11 economically, I mean, we lost an estimated $1 trillion in one day. And then imagine what the cost of TSA and all the other security elements, not to speak of the war in Afghanistan and then the war in Iraq, that this is something in the world we live in today, that this area of the Middle East is not something that's distant from us. This can reach out and touch us anytime, with lone wolf attacks right now being inspired, or such attacks as what we sustained in 9/11. So I don't think we can escape that.
What about Syria, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Kuwait, that whole neighborhood surrounding Iraq? How do these players add to or disrupt the governance of Iraq?
Well, there's a lot of moving parts here, Kevin, and, mm-hmm. and I think if you read one book that gives you an understanding of that, from the beginning of our involvement in Iraq with the Gulf War to date, Victory Undone really has will enable you to have an understanding of where we've been and where we're going and where we are right now. The key player for me right now, I believe, is other than the United States and our decision making, is the Turks. The Turks have said they have the second largest army in NATO. I served with them, when I was a young infantry officer, and they have a real military. They're ready to come into Syria and do the job on the ground if the United States will agree to go after al-Assad, the dictator of Syria, that using chemical weapons on his own people. They really created the genocidal cauldron that we have right now that is Syria, that metastasized with ISIS and al-Qaeda into a conventional invasion into Iraq. So the key player out there is Turkey. Now, the counterbalance to Turkey out there is Iran, which, that's a bad actor out there. And Syria is their only regional ally. And if we were to take out Assad and make Syria democratic, we would definitely put Iran in a box.
Tell us about ISIS.
Well, ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, which now calls itself just the Islamic State, is the leader of it, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. We had him in a prison after in our victory in the Iraq War. To give you evidence of it, we had the current leader of ISIS in a military prison in South Iraq. When we released him in 2009 as part of our victory in the Iraq War and the turnover of security control to the Iraqi security forces, he said, "I'll see you in New York." Now, he changed the name to ISIS, he was the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq. And two leaders before him we killed, including the first leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. He declared allegiance to bin Laden in 2004, publicly declared allegiance. So this is a direct lineage. These are the same people who attacked us on 9/11.
What's the life of a contractor life compared to that of folks in the military?
Well, I was a former Army officer. There's a certain elements as a war zone contractor, as a military contractor. I mean, you definitely have to be very much – security comes first, right? I mean, we had a bunch of people working for me that carried guns. I carried a gun, it went all the time when I was in Iraq, and body armor, the whole bit. But the big differentiator is that we can move in some ways the way the military could not move. I mean, we basically integrated in with the local economy, and we hired locals, and we hired and employed them. We did things the military really shouldn't be doing, like electricians and driving trucks and, doing sewage and those sorts of things, because, I mean, it costs so much to train a soldier out there. So we were able to actually serve as a transmission belt between, the U.S. government's intent of pacifying Iraq and employing people in positive construction projects that created security and drained the swamp, whence the al-Qaeda insurgency sprung.
All right, let's quickly go to the phones. Ron Paul Jim, you're on 580 KIDO.
Morning, guys. Did I hear you say that Assad is allies with ISIS? Did you actually say that?
No. If I said that, then I miscommunicated. No, they're out there, but they have their. What we're doing right now is we're by just going after ISIS in Syria, all right, we're enabling Assad, you know, the dictator of Syria, to attack, you know, our allies, the moderate, you know, the moderate resistance in Syria that came out of the Arab Spring. So we're actually helping Assad by just going after ISIS, and in turn, you know, it's very, very ineffective.
Ron Paul, Jim, anything else?
Yeah, I just found it laughable that everything you're saying is a justification for all our occupation when everywhere we go, the outcome is Muslim extremists taking over. You know, our government sided with the Muslim Brotherhood, sided with the rebels in Libya, sided with the rebels, the so-called rebels in Syria, who then turned around and took the weapons, the training, and all the financing, which has been admitted to by the Saudi Arabian prince that he's financing, and that Turkey is funneling weapons to these people because it's fighting the Kurds that they don't like. This is a, you know, and then the idea that they're selling oil to the open market, and we can't stop them, but we can sanction Russia and do all these things to Russia, but we can't stop tankers. Instead, you're bombing the infrastructure of the Syrian people. And I'm telling you this because I have relatives over there. I am married to a Syrian woman, and she's got family over there. And the person that's actually been fighting ISIS from the beginning until the United States armed them, they wouldn't have been having the strength that they have now. And that's exactly what's happened. Every time there's stories all over the internet that don't make the mainstream media that they're dropping weapons that are supposedly for the rebels and land in the wrong hand. You know, it's a joke. And I think your book is all propaganda, and I don't believe any of it. I'm done.
Oh, I appreciate that. And you know, and I understand your perspective on this, Ron Paul and Jim. And, you know, the bottom line, though, here is that this is not an area of the world that we can step away from. We have to be involved here, and we created a vacuum by not supporting the Arab Spring democratic resistance that really was about to sweep al-Assad from power in 2011. And, you know, and we didn't support the first Arab democracy that we installed in Iraq with much blood and treasure by, you know, by the U.S. And as a result, you know, we have created a situation where we have to reengage. Otherwise, you know, we're going to lead this area to a tremendous genocidal proportion, you know, continuous battle that's going to spill over into Europe. I mean, currently the caliphate, is run by al-Qaeda, has a border with Turkey, the threshold of Europe, thousands of Western passport holders. I mean, we cannot bury our heads in the sand. The ostrich, you know, strategy is just going to, we're going to find our head in the sand and our body separated from it. If we're not careful. I mean, we have to be engaged or else we're going to see terrorism in Europe and terrorism in the United States, and it's going to affect our economy, this ultra-slow recovery we have.
Right.
So, unfortunately, it's going to take some more U.S. blood and treasure. Otherwise, you know, we're going to be in a situation of continuous war that's going to spread terrorism in the United States, I believe.
Victory undone. Carter, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Carter Andrus.
Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Living the dream each and every day. Blessed to be a part of your morning. Thank you all for joining us. K. Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. We go to Vernon Robinson from Alexandria, Louisiana. I was going to say Virginia. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
I am under the weather here, and we are as we're rolling. So anyway, how are you? I guess it's not snowing where you are.
It is not snowing. A cold front came down, but still a lot warmer here than it is either North Carolina or in Idaho. But the last time I was in Idaho in December or in January, it was the only place I could find that was relatively warm and dry. Iowa was not.
I'm with you. So, you know, a lot of activists here and across the country are very excited about Dr. Ben Carson possibly running for the presidency. What are your thoughts on that?
I believe Dr. Carson will run just because of watching what he's been doing of late. From, you know, he had originally said that he wanted to play golf, travel the world with his wife, learn foreign languages, and raise money for kids to go to school. And if he wanted to do that, it's not clear why he would need two political action committees and having a billionaire set up offices in Bethesda, Maryland, leave Fox News, change his party affiliation back to Republican. I believe he's clearing the decks for action, but I, you know, the draft committee is independent of Dr. Carson, so we don't talk to him.
I know, but this is enough for you to commit yourself to backing somebody that, you know, in theory could be a good president, but they said that about a lot of folks.
Well, the draft committee believes that Dr. Carson is the only guy who can beat Hillary Clinton, because in order to beat Hillary Clinton with the current electorate that elected Barack Obama twice, you have to broaden the base of the GOP and stay true to conservative principles at the same time. There are some fellows who can broaden the base, but they want to do so by supporting amnesty and gun control and a couple other things. That will shatter the party or are weak on pro-life issues. There are some guys who, like Scott Walker, who are good at staying true to conservative principles, but they can't broaden the base. So you have to do both, and Dr. Carson can do that. And I think that you also need a nominee who can articulate conservative principles and values and exemplifies them in a way that the average voter can understand. And finally, the current regime has divided the country in every way possible for 6 years, almost 6 years. And it's important that the nominee be able, and I believe Dr. Carson is the only guy possibly in either party who can bond with all the American people and heal the country. So that's the case that the draft committee makes for why Dr. Carson should be the GOP nominee.
Well, that is great, but if Dr. Carson does run, he's got to go up against the Republican Party establishment.
Well, I know Tokyo Rove is out there, and he's licking his chops to get Bush 45 in the race, but hopefully all of the Idaho listeners understand that if you nominate Bush 45, you get Clinton 45.
Now, why do you say that?
Don't do it. Because, again, Jeb is committed to amnesty. He is ambiguous on Common Core, two big bullet points that the base is unacceptable. And so it's not clear that he can broaden the base without tossing a good part of the base overboard. So. I think it'd be a disaster. Jesse Jackson doesn't get it right very often, but he said, stay out the bushes. And it's pretty good advice for the GOP in 2016.
Vernon, if people want to be involved in your quest to do this, what can they do?
We encourage them to go to www.onebenrun.org. Camille Blaylock, who just left the Idaho Republican Party as finance director to have a baby, is the Idaho state coordinator for the draft Ben Carson for President Committee. And we encourage folks to go there. You know, we've tried to do two things to sort of take strategic advantage over conservative activists. One is to be a very responsive campaign. If you leave a message on the website, if you do anything on the website, you get a live response in 24 hours, as opposed to the Republican National Committee, where if you have ever sent them an email, you know that it goes into a black hole, never to be heard from again. And we've also parked a Ferrari in everybody's garage, and that Ferrari is the Nation Builder organizing platform that the website sits on.
Right.
There are three levels of access on the website, and access level three gives you a tremendously powerful organizing tool. And so we encourage folks to go on the website, sign the petition to ask Dr. Carson to run, because Dr. Carson doesn't believe you can look in the mirror and say, honey, I think we look great in the White House. He believes that the office should seat the man and that the American people have to call you to run for office, which is why we launched the petition drive. If folks want to, they can go out, if it's not snowing and freezing, on Black Friday across the nation. Volunteers will be out getting petition signatures, citizens asking Dr. Carson to run.
Vernon, we appreciate it, and stay warm, brother.
Well, I discovered the wonders of Lyme jeans when I was in Iowa, so I hope everybody gets their Lyme jeans out, because it sounds like they're going to need them today.
Yes, sir. Take care, Vernon. Good luck to you.
Take care, and we'll be in touch.
All right, there we have it. Vernon Robinson, the draft Ben Carson. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men,
men.
Hi, KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning, live from the Walmart at Garrity. Do want to thank Two Fly Bri, has kicked off our Treasure Valley Turkey Drive already, contributing two Butterball birds as we come in from Capricorn 1, it seems. Thanks to Nelson's RV for giving us a great place to live, Tate's Rents, our great friend Joe King out here, along with young Jacob. We are here collecting turkeys now until Saturday night at 6 o'clock. And, you know, as Dave Burnett said, it's very cold out. And one of our goals here today is not to talk about how cold we are, but to talk about the need. Certainly, Dave, when you take a look at the weather here, it really reinforces the need for clothes, the need for items, just the need for about everyone, for those folks that don't have what we do.
Yeah, kind of hit early with the temperatures as cold as they are, earlier than normal. I know there's 100 residents right now at City Lights. That's the one with women and kids in them. They are packed, 200 men at River of Life. And not only, you know, not only the needs that they have, you know, day to day, but there's a need for warm coats, gloves, mittens, you name it. There is a need out there this morning. So 100 at City Light, 200 at River of Life over the weekend.
Right, and as we talk about, though, we want people to come by and to donate, and please see us here. We'll be here all day and all night at 580KIDO. And when we talk about the weather, you know, it's the type of weather that it's so cold that if your skin is not covered at all, you immediately start feeling the pain.
Yep, you know, that is, you know, I was thinking about that this weekend. I was out scraping the ice out of my driveway, getting that cleared out, and I thought, man, if you're living out in those conditions, if you're, and there are people who are living in those conditions out there, some people living in their vehicles, it's tough. It's really tough for them.
Well, and again, that's why we're here at 580KIDO. So we will be talking to folks from the folks at the mission. We'll be talking to you, taking your phone calls. How about that, Brian, though? It was 5:15 and he already brought two turkeys.
That's good. I mean, that's early dedication commitment.
And he said he's going deer hunting today.
Nice.
In this weather?
You bet.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the coldest that you've ever hunted in, Dave?
Below zero. I've hunted in below zero.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, no, it's not bad. You prepare for it. You know, you're up there. You got your rig. You're ready to go. It's good.
Yeah, who in their right mind would do that?
I've done it. And obviously,
well, would you do it now?
Well, no, I got a job to do. I'm here with you.
No, I'm with you on that. But, I mean, as cold as it is today,
sure,
you would do it today.
Sure. If you got the right equipment and you're ready for it, yeah.
Huh. Well, good luck, Brian.
Well, I mean, what do you want to do? Wait for it to be 20 degrees?
Yeah.
It'll be that during, once the sun's up, it'll be there. You're not hunting in the dark. You're just getting there in the dark.
And once the sun's up, it'll be there. Trust me.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So other news of the day. What'd you make of the feds at the top of the hour there raiding the NFL because of the drugs?
Yeah, it's a lead story on drugs this morning, too. I was reading that. You know, there has long been questioned, and the NFL Players Association have questioned, you know, the legitimacy and the legality of it. Now the feds have jumped in. I think the Seattle Seahawks were investigated as they flew out of town from their game. I think the 49ers were investigated, maybe Baltimore as well.
And basically the charge is that these doctors aren't doing enough to make sure that these folks are properly taken care of?
Well, no, the charge is that they're dispensing painkillers on the sidelines to get them back in the game.
The sidelines?
Yeah, that it's actually taking place on the field. That's part of the allegations.
Man, that is just crazy when you think about it. But you take a look at the physicality of the NFL, and there was a book written several years ago by the guy who was the doctor of the Raiders. I can't remember. And he would talk about, you know, people getting prescription drugs and, what was it, North Dallas 40, where they go in and they have this, like, it was candy, but it was amphetamines.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that it's like that now to where it's just a big bowl of candy set out there. And the other question is this, you know, if they are a registered licensed doctor, if the player knows what he is, you know, being prescribed and being given during the course of the game, I guess that's one thing. But, you know, I'm not sure about what all the legalities are with that, but they're being investigated by the feds.
So we have that going on. Certainly, it's great to be a New England Patriot or an Arizona Cardinal. Not so good for the Denver Broncos. What happened there?
You know, the past 3 weeks, I was talking about this with a Bronco fan of the building here. Peyton Manning hasn't looked right. He looks like he is not healthy. Not making the passes the way he was earlier in the season. I kind of wonder whether he is not healthy.
Well, you have to wonder the scheme, too. I mean, have they figured him out as far as what he can do and what passes that he likes to throw? Jeff Fisher, a great defensive coach from his days playing with the Bears, you just wonder if people are scheming him a little better.
Perhaps, and he's, you know, that like everyone this time of year, you can't say, oh, no, like everyone, injuries really plaguing, hitting their wide receivers hard right now.
Indeed. So you made it through the game. Talk a little bit about that.
Which game would that be?
The one you called on Friday night.
On Friday night? Great game. Mountain View there in the state championship taking on Highland of Pocatello. That'll be, I believe, they're going to set the official times because they got a couple games to play. But I believe that will be Friday evening. Great game. It was cold, I'll tell you that. It was a chilly one, but it was a little bit colder for Lake City out of Coeur d'Alene than it was for the folks from Meridian at Mountain View, because they're going to state. They're happy.
Now, I have an issue.
I bet you do. What is it?
And I know you're going to slap me back on this, so we're going to give you a full disclaimer already.
Okay.
How can you cancel school and then have a football game?
Part of the problem is that the team from Coeur d'Alene was already almost down here. And so you got a team in transit. So, you know, you can't send them. It's like a two-day sled trip back and forth.
Sure.
So you have a team that's down here, so they went ahead and did that. I mean, I believe Rocky Mountain would have gone ahead over to Highland and done that, but the freeway was closed down because of a crash down around Burley. But, you know, you had busloads of kids that were already almost here.
Well, okay.
What would you like to do with them?
I don't know. It just seems to send the wrong message that you can have a football game, but you can cancel school. And the issue that I have with it is that everybody's going, hey, isn't it great that all the volunteers and the football players and the cheerleaders shoveled the snow and got the field ready, which to a degree is okay, but doesn't that send conflicting messages? Too dangerous for school, but hey, everybody, come on out and shovel the field.
Well, you could have closed it all down. You could have made those kids, you know, take the 7-hour trip back north and not taken care of and done it. I mean, the issue is the school buses, of running school buses in the morning. It's not an issue as to whether it's too cold. Somebody's whistling. It's not an issue as to whether it's too cold or not. It's an issue of running school buses on a school morning and the danger that it could pose for kids, and for kids standing out on the curb on a school day morning with cars slipping and sliding everywhere. That's also a danger.
Sure, but the message being sent, right? You know what I'm saying on that?
What is it? No, what is the message being sent?
The message is it's too cold to go to school.
Which it's not.
And all of us, it's too dangerous to be on the roads, but we're going to have a football game. I mean, really, should those kids have been playing that game that night?
Yes.
Well, that's your opinion. I mean, you take a look at safety and everything else. What was to be gained by it? And we always complain about that sports are, you know, we pump too much sports in it. Why not hold the game? Of course, it isn't warmed up later on. And, well, we can't because of the playoffs. Well, they canceled the World Series once. I mean, doesn't that send the wrong message to kids?
What is it telling kids then?
That it's more important to play sports, football, than go to school.
I don't think that's the message. I think it's a matter of circumstances that you have busloads of kids down from Coeur d'Alene already, that you have decisions to make there. I mean, there's sometimes it's a chance to teach a lesson of responsibility, of making choices. You know,
yeah.
It's not that it's too cold for school. It's just that in the morning, in the dark, it's a little dangerous for kids to be standing on the corner while the event is taking place. When I say the event, while the snow is coming down, while you know, all craziness is breaking out loose. By the time of the game, you know, the weather had calmed down. It was settled.
But it was still cold, and what about the safety of the people out there as far as the fans and everything else?
Well, I guess you could go ahead and hold it in March when it warms back up.
Yeah, like I said, it seems like a no-win situation. I just kind of, again, thought that, you know, if you're going to... Well, everybody else canceled their games, right?
No. There were other games played.
Around here?
Yeah. Bishop Kelly, they, you know, some games are already scheduled for Saturday. But, yeah, there was a couple other games that were played. And basically it was situations where teams had come from a long way. They were already here or mm-hmm. almost here.
Yeah. No, I was thinking, what would be the... So these people came in, they played, and then they drove home?
You know, I can't answer to that. I'm not sure what they did afterwards. I'm not sure if they turned around and drove home.
Sure.
Or if they waited till the next day. I can't answer that.
Yeah, because just getting back to it, I mean, because it was a lot... Well, it was kind of warmer on Saturday, but, again, if you don't have the additional expense of the hotel rooms, then, you know, again... just interesting what happens when it gets colder than it should, earlier than we've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, it is, and it made, you know, and I have to commend the parents, the school staff, the people who went out and cleared the field and got it ready. I mean, even to the point of Boise State, you had Harson out and the AD Coyle out shoveling snow on Saturday morning, getting ready for their game Saturday night.
Well, and it was kind of different. Did you go to the game?
Briefly, yes. I did not stay for the whole thing. I have to admit, bit of a wuss.
I don't know about that. I think it's fairly smart. But I was watching some of the pregame, and they had the offensive coordinator. He was out running around without his shirt on.
Yeah.
And the kids were as well.
That was on Friday during their walkthrough.
Right. And I'm thinking to myself, how bright is that?
Oh, you know, yeah, they're kids. They're just goofing. They're having fun. Having fun!
Well,
I'd be more worried about the fans that were there without shirts on for 3 and 4 hours than I would be for the kids who were out there for, you know, 20 minutes in a run-through being goofy.
Yeah. I guess we'll have to agree to disagree on that. I saw that, and I'm watching it going, what are you trying to prove? Not the kids, but the coach. And, yeah, hey, we're young, we're a different program. Hey, that's great, but don't fall behind 20-0 in the first half or whatever. I just...
You are being so critical.
Well, it just seems stupid. When we, you know, I guess what it is when I see people without homes and such, and I see people just trying to get by and all the car accidents and everything, you know, if you don't have to be out, if you don't have to do things... Just don't do them just because it's that darn dangerous. And to trivialize it, and again, this is my opinion, not anybody else's. When you trivialize it, exactly.
And your mouth doesn't work because it's cold.
Exactly. You know, you it's going to be a lot of laughing this week, folks. To me, it sends the wrong message. And like I said, maybe because I saw so many cars off the
the beaten path. It was just crazy on Friday.
Well, what message would you like to send?
The message I'd like to send is restraint, responsibility, and accountability. And if these kids from Pocatello or wherever are coming in, well, guys, let's put them up somewhere. We got lots of gyms. We can get sleeping bags. Play when it's warmer, when it's safer.
In May.
If you're gonna cancel school, then don't have a football game. That's just my opinion.
Well,
number one,
it was a decision made and decision done. And to be honest with you, I think it was the right decision. They did fine. Everybody got there. Nobody died. Everybody played the game. Decent crowd on hand for it. So I don't know that the wrong message was sent. I don't think any kids are going to go, well, I'm never going to school again because they played football. If they did, then check the head of that kid thinking that.
Well, between that and, again, hey, let's go out there and run around without our shirts on. Look, we're all adults. We don't have to prove how manly we are. I just think that it's the wrong message. But that's
right. We should all be curmudgeons. They were having fun.
Yeah, I suppose. Not in my opinion, though. I think it, again, sends the wrong message. But, you know, how many people would be out there, you know, without their shirts if they, you know, did that in the real world? Not so much, so.
Well, that's kind of weird because right before we went on the air today, I was running around through the parking lot with that shirt on.
Now, I don't have to say anything to Ray and I about that one.
Kevin, your traffic now is coming out of Candy.